I feel like oftentimes Sukkot gets short shrifted because, you know, we spend 30 days talking about Pesach and Shavuot 49 days, and we have all of that little talk about the Yamim Na'arim, but Sukkot you only have like 4 days to talk about it. So I figure it's worth spending a little time talking about Sukkot. I want to talk about two Sukkot that both appear on in Bavli Masechet Sukkah, Daf Dalet Amud Bet. They're back to back. The first one is more straightforward halakha, and the second one I think has some philosophical interest. Let's get right into it. So here's the case. The reason I came upon this is because a friend of mine asked me, he has a house that looks similar to this, and he asked me if he could make a sukkah on it. As you can see, this, the top is all latticed, right? You want, maybe shut the light so you can see better. So tell me what you think. He basically wants to put schach on top, and he wants to know if he needs to do anything else. So, what would you say?
It was only two walls.
It's not allowed to be easy.
Can it be attached to a permanent structure?
Yeah, the walls can be a permanent structure. The walls could be animals. Could be anything. So here's one wall. That's fine. And this lattice here is the second wall, right? So far so good. But we need.
And he put like drapes on the wall.
You're saying he has to do something. He needs a third wall.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, how high does the wall have to be?
Good question. Right. A wall doesn't have to go all the way up. We have a concept called gud asik, which means that if you have a wall that's somewhat high, you can extend it and go up. Now, how high does it have to be so that you can do gud asik? It has to be 10 tefachim. A tefach is a hand fist, about 3 to 4 inches. Different opinions. Some say, Rav Moshe Weiss says 3.5 inches, Chazon Ish says 4 inches. So 3 tefachim would come out to about 35 or 40 inches tall. So the question is this, would this be considered a good wall? Right? Now the fact that space is in it is okay, we call it, say, lavud, as long as it doesn't have more than 3 tefachim, that's okay, and even the space looks like it's very little, so we can use this as a wall. The question is how high it is. So I measured it, and in that, his house it was only 28 inches, which is not 10 tefachim according to any opinion. So he can put some drapes, right? I mean, drapes are a little floppy, you need something a little sturdier, right? Recently, I mean, for years and generations I've been using the canvas sukkot, but recently everybody decided that they sway too much, and so they give you these ropes. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
They said the ropes alone are the wall, and you don't actually need the canvas. So I told them it's too short, you might have to put something else on top, get a rope or something, and just extend the wall up a little, and that would be okay. Then I looked into it a little further. Yeah.
For gud asik to work, so you have to have the entire space filled up. Like, would he be able to put a rope?
Yes, he could put a rope like 8 inches away, and that would fill in. You can use lavud and gud asik. Right. That's the new ones that they sell now, is just the bottom, 3 ropes, and then a bar. So
lavud
that's
requires
it.
How much space?
3 tefachim. Well, the only thing that has to be temporary is the schach. The walls can be made out of steel. Okay. So here's the gemara that I came upon. It's getting cut off. All right, you'll have to believe me for the words that I'm inserting. It says Tanu Rabbanan. Nietz arba kundesin v'sikech al gaban Rabbi Yaakov machshir v'chachamim poslin. So basically the case is this: if you have 4 poles and you put schach on top, we're going to say it's talking about on top of a roof. So basically, let's say this is the roof of a house, this table, and I put a pole in each of the corners, and I connect the poles on top, I put schach, and no walls at all. Right? So this case is a machloket between Rabbi Yaakov, says it's okay, he's a Tana, and Chachamim, they say it's not good. Now, seemingly there's a problem with this, right? Where are the walls? Right? You just have four poles and schach on top and no walls. How could it be good? So Rav Huna says, Machloket al sfat hagag, Derebi Yaakov savar amrinan gud asik mechitzta, v'rabanan savre la amrinan gud asik mechitzta. He says, this is how it works. Because it's on a roof, so there's a wall under, right, there's the wall of the house, and so we can consider the wall of the house extending upwards up to the sky. Right, so even though the sukkah itself, where you're sitting on top of the roof, doesn't have any walls, we're continuing the wall of the house above. Got it? Okay. Says, no, you can't say good asik in that kind of case. Let's say I did the same thing, not at the corners, but right in the middle. I'm going to have poles here, right? Let's say I made a sukkah just like this, and I just put schach on top. Right? And that's all I did. And I didn't have any walls. So in that case, everybody would agree it's no good because there's no walls underneath that I can extend upwards.
In the first case, there were short walls in this
house? In the first case, there's no walls at all, only poles. Right? It would only have, only be poles.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be aligned with the walls of the house, exactly. Okay, now, why is this interesting for me? Because, you see, in this case, right, the schach is above the wall over here. So in other words, even though this is only 28 inches, if I count this bottom, the foundation, as part of the wall, then that's plenty, right? And then I could say this entire thing goes all the way up, and then it would be kosher even without. Got it? Okay, well, let's see what the halakha is. So far, we only saw one opinion. Okay, so Rav Huna says that according to the majority, it's pasul. So far we're not good, right? We can't rely on the one minority opinion of Rabbi Yaakov against the majority. However, there is a different interpretation of this machloket. In other words, there's a meta machloket here about how to, there's a machloket between Rav Huna and Rav Nachman about how to interpret this first machloket above. Rav Nachman says no. When they were arguing about be'emsagag machloket, right, in this case, when I put the four in the middle of the roof, that's when Rabbi Yaakov said it was good, and Chamim said pasul. But now, what about if they're on the corner? So they asked him. By emsa agag machloket amal basvat agag divra kol kishera or dilma benzo u benzo machloket tegu. So he said. So you think that they're arguing in the middle, but what about if it's on the edges? Is it also does everybody think it's allowed then, or is it also machloket and we leave it up for, right? We leave it standing. So there's no resolution. Okay, so if you had to decide this halakha based on this gemara, what would you say? I mean, according to Rav Huna, who actually is rejected later on in the gemara, so it doesn't actually matter anyway, Rabbanan say it's no good on the corner, so that would be no good. According to Rav Nachman, we're not sure whether it's good or not. So we end up with a safek. And there seems to be a law that's midoraita, and usually a safek midoraita would be lechumra, right? So if we only had this gemara, I think we would have to say we can't rely on this opinion. So far, so good? Any questions? Okay. And there is a question of how Rav Nachman could say that in the middle of the gag, Rabbi Yaakov says, okay, I mean, you only have four poles. How could that be okay? Right? So then the Gemara explains that it's actually talking about a very thick pole, which can act as a wall. There's four of them and each of them have right angles, it can kind of be in a different type of enclosure. Okay. Now if we look at the Rambam, we find something surprising. The Rambam is codifying this Gemara and he says, Ni'etz arba kundisin al ba'a al arba zaviyot, four poles on four corners of a roof. Zaviot hagag zichech al gaban hoil vasikuch al sfat hagag kishera veroin et hamechitzot hatachtonot ki'ilu hen olot lemala al sfat hasikuch. So it says because they're at the corners, they're all the way at the edge of the roof, so we can consider the wall of the house to extend upwards and that will be and go all the way up until the schach, and so that's okay. And everybody wonders, where did the Rambam get this from? Right? The Ravad right there says, Amar Avraham, Ze eno machvar, de afilu l'Rav Nachman ka'e beteku, ulechumra. Certainly according to Rav Huna, it's definitely not good. But even according to Rav Nachman, they leave it, they don't resolve it. And so we have to be machmir. And some of the other commentaries also can't figure out what the Rambam meant.
The Torah of Nachman says if it's on the corner, then it ruins its time.
And Nachman says, is it that, or is it machloket in both cases? Right? We don't know. Okay, so here's where the Geniza manuscript can help. Right? Geniza manuscript, everybody know what that is? So that's where the Jews, about 1,000 years ago, threw all their garbage, all the things that they weren't usable anymore, and we uncovered it about 100 years ago and found some of the best manuscripts of Gemara, along with many other things. And we have a little piece that contains our sugya, and it's almost the same. The beginning's the same, right? If you have four poles, Be'akumar Shir, Famin Poslin, Rav Huna is the same. Then he says, Rav Nachman Amar Be'emza Hagag Machloket, Aval Besfat Hagag Divrei Hakol Keshira. Right? What happened? They resolved the teku somehow. Right? They say, no, according to Rav Nachman, the machloket between Chachamim and Rabbi Yaakov is only in the middle, but if it's on the corner, everybody agrees it's fine. And since later on they reject Rav Huna, so the last man standing is Rav Nachman, and the doubt that we had before is resolved. So where did Rambam get his halakha from? He must have had either this Geniza text or something very similar. Okay, now if you might want to ask me which one is original, what do you think? Which text of the Gemara is original?
The first.
The standard edition.
Yeah, and then they cut the end out.
Why do you think that?
They both the original, just different pieces.
Both original. I mean, you would assume that the...
There are a ton of things passed down, and just some of them are codified.
But one is longer than the other. So one is just a longer version. Like, one is just, has just more than that.
Okay, so it could be that there's two different versions from two different Batei Midrash or editors, and never was one. Another possibility, I mean, usually Karei Geniza is much older, so we like any manuscript from the Karei Geniza. So, I mean, the rule of thumb would be to assume that this is more original. On the other hand, I mean, you can see why, if there was a teku, someone might resolve it. But it's hard to understand why, if this was the original, someone would introduce a doubt into it and introduce a teku, right? So, we can't be sure which one is original, but we can be sure that the Rambam had this girsa. Okay, so now, based on that, can we decide halakha that this guy's porch is okay? I mean, can we change the halakha based on a Geniza fragment that we find? Well, in this case, it's a little bit easier, because Shulchan Aruch gives us an in. Shulchan Aruch, summarizing that this case and the Rambam, says, Ni'etzar ba'kundesin, if it's four poles, ben be'emtza hagag, ben al-sfat hagag, v'sikech al-gaban, pesula. So first he says, this case is not good. Shulchan Aruch is pesul. V'yesh machshirin, ben al-atz al-sfat hagag, meshum da'amrinan guda, sik mechista. But some people say it's okay. So, Shulchan Aruch gives us two options. Now, in general, which one would you follow when the Shulchan Aruch gives you two options? What? The first one, right? Why?
That's what it means. Yeah.
Okay, the general rule, Stam V'yesh, right? The first one is given as a general opinion, and the second one that says V'yesh, and other people say, so usually Stam V'yesh, halacha kestam. These are rules that were developed afterwards. Not sure if Yosef Karo himself would have agreed with those rules, but he's trying to accommodate different customs. So generally we would still follow the first opinion. However, let's go back into the reasoning. Why does the Shulchan Aruch include both of these, and what does he mean? So we look at the Bet Yosef, right? His great work before he wrote Shulchan Aruch as a summary, and he quotes the Gemara, Yetzer Bakundesin. Quoting from the Torah, and he says in the beginning of our Masechet, he quotes the entire Gemara the way we have it in the printed editions. Teku. And it says the Rosh said, "Kevan de Salka beteko avdina nechumna kerabanan de pasle bezo bezo ve'aliba de Rav Nachman ulkach mishish mitaharif." The Rosh says, since it's resolved as it's not resolved, it ends in the teku, we have to be machmir, as the rabbis say, the opinion of the sages, and that's why the Rif leaves it out. Right? The Rif summarizes the Gemara, only includes what's halacha l'maaseh in the bottom line. So if he leaves this out, it means he doesn't think that it's halacha. So fine. So according to that, you couldn't use it. Aval Rabbeinu Yitzchak Yat, a rabbi from Lucena, Spain, 11th century, katav de Rav Shiri Ragaon lagaris. And generally, Geonim are closest in time and place to the Amoraim of Babel. So anytime we have a tradition from the Geonim, we have to put a lot of weight on that. He says, Rav Shiri Ragaon did not have that these words, Ibaya Lehu, the question, Aval Svatagayako Keshera, Upaskin Kerb Nachman. This is what he had. Rav Nachman Amar, Bem Sagam Machok, Adam Sagag, Debea Kol Keshera, just like we saw in the Kairi Geniza fragment. And Upaskin Kerb Nachman, and that's what the Rambam also wrote. And he quotes the Rambam. ובכל הספרים שלנו ישנה בעיה. In all of our, Rav Yosef Karo saying, in all the books that he has in his possession, it says, has the question, the way we have it in our printed edition, and the teku. Hilkach lasa mechinen al gershat Rav Shiri Ragaon lehakel. So I can't rely on just something that I heard that Rav Shiri Ragaon has, because I don't actually have it in front of me, any manuscript that has those words. And so we're posek other people. So in other words, Bet Yosef here gives us all his reasoning why he came to that conclusion. He says, I know that the Rambam says that, and I know that I heard that the Geonim have a different girsa, but I don't have it in front of me, therefore I can't be posek that way, therefore I have to be a machmir. So what's the conclusion? Today, if we found in the Kairi Geniza an actual manuscript that has it, right, so that we can assume that Yosef Karo would have permitted it in such a case. And in fact, since he does say v'yesh, I think in this case we have a lot of room to permit such a case. So here's a great example of where looking at a manuscript tradition can actually decide something halacha l'maaseh. This is actually a bigger question that's been dealt with by Rishonim and Achronim, whether if you find some manuscript you can change, overturn halacha. There's all different opinions about it. There's a few articles on it. Chazon Ish is famous for being careful not to. However, in this case, I think it's different from those cases, because here, Shulchan Aruch actually knew about this tradition and just said, if we had a manuscript, I would say it's okay. So now we have a manuscript, right? We can say it's okay. Yeah.
Do folks control that?
I don't know.
Is that a topic
that
anyone...
I haven't seen any shoe team about it.
So is he going
to
build it?
But I just got to know Bar Ilan, so maybe there's more things there. So he's just going to put the staff on top. Unless anyone has an objection. This will be a 15.
That's okay. A suggestion.
Yeah.
I think you should print these slides out and post it on the slip up.
Right. And post it all along the barrier, that way it'll be hide, okay, just in case. Okay, very good. So that was just an interesting halakha that I found. Okay, next thing I want, the next sugya on the bottom of the page talks about the shortest sukkah. What's the shortest sukkah? It's the first mishnah in sukkah, so you should all know it. I mean, if you don't finish, usually they can start. Right? But, okay, the what's the tallest sukkah? That's the first line.
20.
Okay, 20 amot, right? Sukkah can't be more than 20 amot high. And the shortest one is 10 tvachim. Okay. Okay. The shortest sukkah is 10 tvachim. And now the Gemara that I'm going to look at in a couple of minutes talks about why. Why 10 tvachim? What's the source? But before that, I want to introduce a couple of other things to make so that my point about that ground will be very clear. What I'm about to say is actually more or less from this book by Rabbi Yaakov Nagin. I knew him when I was in first year Yeshiva Bachar in Yeshivat HaRetzion, and he was like, been there for years already. We'd always ask him, you know, what do I seem to say? We have no idea. He would explain it to us. Actually, I had already some dealings with Rabbi Nag. He was known then as just Yaakov Ganak. And he was he had a particular skill of playing chess blindfold. So one Shabbat, we decided to take him up on it, and me and two of my friends went to his house, and we each had chessboards in front of us, and he was turned around so he couldn't see any of the chessboards, and he played all of us simultaneously. Right? We would just tell him, king's pawn up two, and then he would respond, and he would go next person. And the game went on for over an hour. He was playing three games at the same time, and then we had to stop for mincha, which makes it more difficult for him because he has to continue memorizing the game throughout mincha until we came back. And one of the great achievements of my lifetime is that while my two friends lost, I got a draw. So I still consider it a great achievement that I was able to draw a blindfolded person playing two other people. Okay, but anyway, he has a fantastic book on the Chag of Sukkot and all of its rituals, which I have the only copy out of the library, so I assume no one else knows what I'm about to say. Okay. First Mishnah I want to look at is in the second parak of Sukkah. It says, "Rabbi Eliezer omer, 14 seudot chayav adam lechol besukkah, achat bayom ve'achat balayla." So you have to eat 14 meals in the Sukkah, once every day and once every night for 7 days. Of course, not Shemini Atzeret. V'chamim omnim en lo davar kitzva. They say, it's kind of like Pesach. Pesach, you only have to eat matzah on the first night. The rest of the time, you can eat matzah if you want to. Mitzvah, if you do it, you don't have to. Same thing with Sukkot. You have to eat the first night, but the rest of the time, you don't have to at all. Okay. So that's one machlok between them. Second machlok. The other Rabbi Eliezer, mi shelo achal lele yom tov arishon, yashlim b'lele yom tov ha'acharon. Says, what if you missed? You weren't able, or you forgot, for whatever reason, you didn't eat a meal on the first night of Sukkot, you can make it up on any other night. Actually, you can even make it up on Yom Tov Acharon, which is Shemini Atzeret, when you don't even eat in the Sukkah, right? So you can make up eating in the Sukkah with the meal that you eat inside. Okay, Chamim omrim, en l'davar tashlumin, al zeh ne'emar, me'uvat lo yuchal litkon, v'chesron lo yuchal lihimanot. Says, no, if you missed it, you can't make it up. It's something crooked that cannot be made straight, and it's something missing that you can't count. Okay, got it? Now here's something interesting. Another Mishnah, in a completely different context, in Masechet Chagigah. Masechet Chagigah is all about when you come to Jerusalem three times a year, you have to bring two korbanot. One is korban ze'iyah, and one is korban Chagigah. So a special korban for coming to Jerusalem for the holiday. And this, you bring it, you're supposed to bring it the first day. But what if you forget? Mi shelo chag, if you didn't bring the korban Chagigah v'yom tov harishon shel chag, chogeg et kol haregel v'yom tov acharon shel chag. So you can bring it any time, all 7 days, or even the last day of Shemini Atzeret. Aval haregel v'lo chag, eno chayav ba'acharayuto, al zeh ne'emar, me'uvat lo yuchal litkon, v'chesron lo yuchal limanot. If the entire 8 days already passed, and you didn't bring it, then you no longer have to or can bring it, and it quotes the very same pasuk. So you see that these two Mishnayot are purposely parallel. Right, this pasuk. This is the only two times that this pasuk from Kohelet is quoted in the Mishnah. Yeah.
Just a question on Bet Vav. How do Rabbi Eliezer and Chachamim? How do their two approaches line up? Doesn't it seem like it should be opposite? Like,
this one and this one.
Yeah, like their Rabbi Eliezer says that if you're chayav on all the sukkot, then you shouldn't be able to meet them up if you miss one.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it makes more sense with Chachamim's approach.
Okay, good. Excellent question, and the Gemara asked that. And the Gemara actually deduces from here that Rabbi Eliezer changed his mind and agreed with Chachamim that you only have to eat the first night. And that's why it says in the second one, if you didn't do that first night, then you can do it every other night. That's what the Gemara says. I'm not sure if that is the pshat. I mean, the Rambam says something like, well, you have to eat double the next night, double appetizers, right, to make up for it. Okay. So why is this so? I mean, why should these two different halachot be phrased in the same way? What can we learn about that? What can we learn from this?
Well,
And what does this tell us about meals in the sukkah? What are they like? Good, right? Eating a meal in the sukkah is like bringing a korban. And then the laws of one extend to the other. So that's pretty interesting, right? I mean, it's not just that, you know, I forgot to put on tefillin today. Can I put it on twice tomorrow, right? It's comparing it to bringing korbanot. Okay, so hold that in mind. And actually, here's the Yerushalmi. This suggests that Rabbi Eliezer didn't change his mind. Because Yerushalmi says, what is Rabbi Eliezer's reason? Why does he say you have to eat 14 seudot? So it says, Matama did Rabbi Eliezer. In Israel, they didn't pronounce vowels and beginnings of letters. So they called him Eliezer. Like laser, right, in Yiddish. Ne'amar kan teshivu, ve'ne'amar le'alan, u'petach o'mo'ed teshivu yomam ve'layla. So it says by Sukkah you have to sit, teshvu, and it also says, it's talking about this, this is the 7 days, Shvat Yimei Miluim of the Mishkan, when they're consecrating the Mishkan, and over there Moshe tells Aaron, you have to make the Korban, Bashur Tabasar, and eat it. And it says, don't leave there for 7 days. And stay there day and night. So the Pesukim here have the word Teshvu and talks about day and night, and they're eating a Korban. So too, the word Teshvu regarding Sukkot, right, we'll make an analogy, a Gezerah Shavah. And so too, by Sukkah, we also have to eat a meal, which is like a korban, and do it in the day and the night. So this is a fantastic source, because a lot of times we see the Gemara make a gezerah shavah, just this word and that word, and you know, just the same word, and is there any underlying connection? So I think here, there is an underlying, it's not just that it's the same word teshvu, but it's the same concept, that they're borrowing one concept from the other, that the sukkah is kind of like a mishkan. And eating a meal in the sukkah is kind of like bringing a korban, right? Both of them are 7 days, and therefore both have a requirement of eating in the day and the night. Got it? Okay. So that's source number two. Third source, I want to bring from the temple scroll, and this is very exciting because anybody know what the temple scroll is? That's good. It's one of the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's one of my favorite scrolls because of how we got our hands on it. This is my favorite story, so I have to tell it. It was discovered in 1956 by Bedouin, and it was given to this shoemaker turned into antiquities dealer, because shoes are made out of leather and scrolls are made out of leather, so they figured he was the most appropriate person to deal with it. So temple scroll is immensely important. It's the longest scroll that describes the temple that they're going to build in the future in great detail. So this guy's name, this shoemaker in Jordanian, his name was Kando, and he had the scroll, and he knew that Israelis wanted it. So he told them about it, and the archaeologist who was involved in all of this, his name was Yigal Yadin, and he told Yigal Yadin, I have the scroll. Yigal Yadin says, I want to buy it. I'll give you $130,000 for it. And he agreed, and he said, okay, I want a down payment. So he gave a down payment of $10,000 just to get a little piece so he could check to make sure it was correct, it was authentic. And he checked it, and he gave him $10,000. And then Kando said, no, I changed my mind, and he kept the $10,000 and didn't give over the scroll. So really slime ball. I have slime on my mind because it's science time this morning. So anyway, so this is going on in 1960s. 1967 comes, and what happens in 67? The Six-Day War, right? At this Six-Day War, we take over the West Bank where Kando lives. And Yigal Yadin also happens to be a general and a big politician. And so, if they take over the West Bank, he gets a few guys and tells them, go in a jeep and drive to this guy's house, take your guns with you, and get the scroll. So they go and they get the scroll, and kind of was hiding it under in a shoebox, of course, right, under one of the floorboards, and already the top half is all eaten away. I'll show you. And so it wasn't kept in such great condition on that account. But anyway, now we have it. They paid him in the end $128,000 just because they wanted other people to come forth with scrolls and get paid. Okay, since then, it's been sitting in Israel in the either the Rockefeller Museum or the Shrine of the Book. But 2 weeks ago, Google put the entire thing online. So this is very exciting. First time I'm able to do this with the class. So this is the entire scroll that Google put digitized and put online. So now you can go anytime you want and read the Temple Scroll. Okay, so let's get to the section that I'd like to read, which is line 42. Column 42. And let's see if anybody can be successful at reading the scroll in the original. Anybody want to try? Any brave souls?
Very small.
Well, so I can make it bigger. That's your excuse.
Just a control box.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay, we're going to start right here. Sorry. Okay, so yet one thing is that yuds look like vowels. So those are both yuds. Agag hashlishit.
Oh, okay. Agag hashlishit ha'sene amudim u'mekorim v'korot ma'amid el amud makom v'sukot.
Okay, let me just explain. So there are, he said before that you have to make the courtyard and make all these offices in the courtyard, and you make three levels. And now he says, agag hashlishit, on the top of the third roof, you should put poles and connect the poles together, elamud makom l'sukot, to make room for sukot. Okay. Shimona and...
What's before that?
No. Givohim. Okay, good. Givohim. Shmona Amot. Shmona Amot. Is that kosher?
No.
Yes.
That's okay. Shmona Amot. I'm mine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Shmona Amot. Yeah.
Vayu ha Nasot.
Hasukot. Vayu ha Hasukot Nasot.
Nasot Aleiten.
Right.
Mikol Shana v'Shana.
Good.
Mechal Hasukot
Le Zikne Haida. Right. That's a you.
Le Nesiim.
Right. Nesiim would be only married people. Okay. Le Nesiim. Le Rashe.
Le Roshe.
Bate.
Bate. Ha Amot.
Imot, no, women are still put here. Ha'avot.
Right.
They didn't have any women, so they didn't have to deal.
Lusarei ha...
Ha'alafim.
Ha'alafim, lusarei ha'meot, asher,
yihyu,
olim, yoshvim,
shama,
ad, alot, et olat ha-moed, asher l'chag ha-sukot, shana b'shana.
Excellent! Okay, aspiring Vinci Scroll scholar. Okay, so you should on the roof, right, there's another sukkah on the roof, unintended, right? But anyway, sukkah on the roof, and you put four poles, and so it sounds like the four poles are permanent structures that you have all year round. And I don't know if they had, they don't talk about the stach, I don't know. Okay, and they should be there for the heads, all the elders and heads of the families, when they come up to Yerushalayim for the holiday, they will sit in the sukkot. Ad, here's something interesting. It had originally had an ayin here, and they, it's hard to tell on the screen, but someone erased the ayin and stuck it in here. They realized that, man, this looks like the same hand, realized they made a mistake. So ha'alot, until they sacrifice the olot of the festival of Sukkot every year. So, in other words, they're building the Sukkot there, and the elder is supposed to sit in the Sukkah all day, maybe I guess all night, all day, until the time that they make the sacrifice. So what you have here, again, is a connection between sitting in the Sukkah and making a sacrifice. Right? Somehow sitting in the Sukkah is the same or closely related to making the sacrifice. So that's interesting, just background for the Gemara that we just saw that connected to. Okay, and we got to see Desi's well original, so it's worth coming just for that. Okay. So that's the, here's the English show. Okay, this can help explain a Mechilta, right? Tana Erik Midrash. Also, Mechilta says, Sukkota, this is, here's the Pesuk talking about, by Subnei Salmen Amis says, Sukkota, they come to, what does that mean? They come to a place called Sukkot, right? So Sukkota, what does Sukkota mean? Three opinions. Rabbi Eliezer, a friend, says Sukkot mamash hayu. Dichtiv Yaakov nasa Sukkota. Yaakov also went to Sukkot, interestingly, right? And over there, when Yaakov got there, he actually made tents, because it says he made tents for him and his family, his animals. So there were actual tents. Hachamim omrim en Sukkot ela makom. This sounds like the Peshat, what you said. Look, they leave Sukkot, so you see it's a place. Sukkot makom. Right, Rabbi Akiva was well known for his mystical exploration, so he says that Sukkot are actually Ananei HaKavod, because right, we know from Shema Donsa that there were Ananim that went with them everywhere they went. Hashem amachon har Sion v'al mikrae ha'anan yomam v'noga esh la'abad laila k'al kol kavod chupa en li ela l'she'abar latid labo minayin tamadumav sukkah tiye l'sel yomam mechorev. So Rabbi Akiva is using the following pesukim from Yeshayahu that's talking about Hashem is going to make on Hasion on Jerusalem a cloud by day and fire by night. And it will be a sukkah. So you see, since it says the word sukkah here, and the sukkah is not referring to an actual tent, right? The pasuk just means God's going to make these ananim, and ananim will be as like a sukkah for shade during the day and a shelter for water and dew. So you see that sukkah here means ananim. So too in Shemot it means ananim. Okay, so a little far-fetched for Peshat, but we see an insight into what Rabbi Akiva is saying, right? What is he saying about a sukkah that we make? You know, I mean, he knows he actually made a sukkah. He didn't just put clouds together and sit in them, right? But he's saying the sukkah that we're sitting in is representative of Ananei HaKavod. Ananei HaKavod represent, in turn, God's Shekhinah, right? So A equals B equals C. The sukkah represents God's Shekhinah. So we have already a lot of sources that talk about eating in the sukkah as being a korban, the sukkah itself being like a mishkan, and now that the mishkan, that the sukkah is like ananim, Ananei HaKavod. Okay. So finally, I want to get to this is the last part that we're going to see, the last source. So this is the sugya right after the sugya we saw before about the sukkah on the roof and the four poles. The Gemara says, "Veshenagi bohasat tefachim min nela." And had it with the source that a short sukkah is only 10 tefachim. That's the minimum. Itmar av rabbi chanina rabbi yochanan rabbi chaviva matnu v'kul aset moed kol hay ki hay sukkah chadufe rabbi yochanan u'mayle rabbi yonatan. This is a side point. Rav and Rabbi Yochanan are all first generation Amoraim. Rabbi Chaviva is the seventh generation Amora. So it doesn't make sense that they will be all together. But Rabbi Chaviva is not actually saying the of what's down here, Rabbi Chava is saying what's here. He says, in all of Seder Moed, whenever you see Rabbi Yochanan, you should change it for Rabbi Yonatan. So here we have Rabbi Yochanan, you should change it for Rabbi Yonatan. Okay. Anyway, what did these three early Amoraim say? They said, Aron tisha v'chapor etefa, charet kan asara. How do we know 10? Because the Aron was 9 tefachim, and it was covered by the kaporet, and that was 1 tefach, 9 plus 1 is? Nobody?
10.
Excellent. Uchtiv v'no'adti lecha sham v'dibarti itcham al kaporet, and it says that God is going to speak to us from on top of the kaporet. And Rabbi Yosef added, "Me'olam lo yarda shchina lemata, v'lo alu Moshe ve'Eliyahu lemarom, sh'ne'emar v'ashamayim shamayim la'Hashem v'asetanu bnei Adam." That the Shekhinah never came down, and no one, even Moshe Eliyahu, never went up to heaven, because the pasuk says, "Shamayim, right? The heavens is for God, and the earth is ours. These are two separate realms, and never can they mix." So does anybody understand this proof? As proof that a sukkah is, minimum sukkah is 10 tefachim.
God is one?
Because it's true that God is one, but no, they're saying 9 plus 1 is 10, so God never came down from 10. It's a little hard to follow what the Gemara is even saying. It sounds like it's saying something like, look, you see that there's two rishuyot, there's two realms, the earthly realm and the heavenly realm, and the separation is at 10 tefachim. So since in philosophy, 10 tefachim is the boundary, so too by sukkah, if you want to make a boundary, it should be 10 tefachim. This seems a little far-fetched place to get your source from. I mean, you could have thought of easier sources. We have, if you want to make a mechitza, we have mechitzot all over halacha, right? What are other examples of mechitzot that we make? Okay, mechitza in the Bet Knesset, what else? Right. Don't have such halachic roots in the ground. But better ones are like mechitza for Shabbat, for Eruv. You're not farmers, but for Pe'ah or for Kilayim, if you want to make a mechitza between two different things that you're planting. Right. So there's all kinds of mechitzot all over halacha. And in many cases, we see asarat tefachim for an Eruv. It has to be asarat tefachim. So it's very easy to learn. What is a mechitza? How big is a mechitza? 10 tefachim. How do you know? Because all over halacha, we have 10 tefachim. How is it about all of a sudden going into where God lives and where man lives and 10 tefachim? What is it talking about? Okay, so looks like there's something deeper going on, right? And the sukkah, what is the sukkah? Therefore, what does that 10 tefachim mean? That's the meeting space between Hashem and humans. And when we build the sukkah, we're making a space where we can just touch, right, that liminal space. It's a place where it's saying we can't live in God's realm. We can't understand God all the way, but we can be neighbors, right? And we can peek open and see a little bit through. And now the Gemara challenges this view. So, v'lo yada shechina lamata, God never came down below 10. Vaketiv vayered Hashem al har Sinai. What doesn't it say that? God came down on the mountain. So of course, what's the answer going to be? No, lemala masat tefachim. It was 10 tefachim, but it never came all the way down the mountain, just hovering. Well, what about in Zechariah when it says "Vamdu raglav v'yomu al har hazitim"? It says God is going to stand on har hazitim. What's the context in Zechariah? What's the context in Zechariah? What is it talking about? Sukkot, right? This is the haftarah for the first day of Sukkot. Pay attention on Sukkot. Amazing haftarah. It's all earthquakes and things. So it says God is going to stand on the mountain. Doesn't that mean standing on the mountain? It says no. Lemal asat vachim is hovering. God could do it. Hovering 10 tefachim above. Never came all the way down. And so what about Moshe? Moshe never went up. Didn't say Moshe Allah el Elohim. Moshe went up to God. There's no lemata masara. It never went past that. So it's not a physical 10 tefachim, right? It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how physically high or low. The point is, there's a certain barrier. Moshe went very high and was able to attain a very deep knowledge of God, but never passed that threshold. Never actually went into heaven. And Eliyahu also, Hakati Vayal Eliyahu Basara Shamaima, no lemata masara. And now the last one, so we have two about God coming down, two about people coming up. And the last one's going to be a little bit of an exception. You know, anytime I don't know what a pasuk means, I look in the NJPS. And typically it always says, meaning of Hebrew uncertain, right? When you need it, it doesn't help. But anyway, the pashat sounds like machez, lechos means to grab, but here is the only time it occurs in PL, so you can make up any word you want. Machez seems to mean here covering up the face of God's throne and putting on it an anan, a cloud so you can't see. Oh, Yom Kippur, right? We open the Kodesh Kodeshim, and he makes the Ketoret cloud so that you can't see in. Okay, good. So we got Yom Kippur. The Midrash takes us to talking about Moshe. You know, the famous Midrash, Moshe goes up and to get the Torah, and all the Malachim say, why should you give it to him? He's only human. And God says, answer him. He says, I'm not going to answer the angels. They're going to burn me. They're going to kill me. He says, don't worry. Hang on to my throne and I'll protect you. And he quotes this pasuk. So Me'achez Pnei Kiseh is talking about Moshe who's holding on to God's throne. So look, you see that Moshe is holding onto God's throne. Obviously, right? He went up above the ten tefachim. And he says, no, lemate masara. No, he still stayed below. But isn't he holding on? The legs of the throne extended down below ten, and Moshe was able to hold on to it. So it's like the one case when the human and divine were able to meet and hold on to each other. So, I mean, this is amazing, right? Because on the face of it, looks like it's just a plain old halakha, how do we know 10? But within this plain old halakha, it's mixing in this very deep idea that God is transcendent, and so we can't know anything about Him, and He's in a different realm. But if we try hard, we can come close. And the idea of sukkah is, when you're sitting in sukkah, you should feel like, you know, part of the sukkah is that it has to be mostly shade, right? It's mostly shade because you can't see heaven, but you can peek through and see some stars, see a couple of rays of light. So we're sitting in the sukkah. We should have that feeling of shivti v'bet Hashem, like we're sitting in the Bet HaMikdash, that we're sitting among the Shekhinah, that we don't have the protection of our usual home, but we're under God's protection. And this idea is, we see throughout all of the little details of halakha. So it's important to make sure you're sitting in a kosher sukkah, whether it's on a roof or a porch or wherever it is, but also when you're sitting there, to have a feeling like you're in the presence of the Shekhinah. Thank you. Any comments, questions?
Yeah. I had a question. Maybe you could tell us a little about what you're doing in general this year and how this relates.
This doesn't relate to anything I'm doing. a little bit. Part of what I'm doing is, I mean, when you read the Gemara Bavli and Yerushalmi, it always seems a bit strange. It's not like written in regular prose that people normally write. So you might say, oh, because ancient, that's why. Actually, we have a lot of ancient books from the same time. Look at Josephus or any of the Greek writers, and they're writing plays and histories and all things that make perfect sense, right? So what's the genre of the Gemara? That's the question I'm dealing with. And you see, like, this is a different genre, but it's deep and has its own rules. So one thing I'm working on is reading Talmud on the background of Greco-Roman rhetoric. The standard education in Roman times, Greek times, is you learn rhetoric, which basically means the art of writing and making a speech. They did is debating team all day long, basically, right? That's what everybody learned. I mean, whoever had education, the upper class, and that would prepare people to be lawyers or politicians. And we find their exercises, and part of the exercise was you have to take some law, some case, and argue both sides. And I thought that was pretty fascinating because when you're reading Gemara, it's doing that all the time. So reading Gemara in this background, the rabbis were, even if they didn't go to these actual rhetorical schools or these law schools, but certainly they heard these traveling sophists getting up on soapboxes and saying these fancy speeches and all that. They're within that culture, and I think reading Talmud within that with that background in mind can help explain a lot of what the Gemara is trying to do. If you come up with any, if you find any to go that sound like they're your writing exercises from ninth grade, then let me know. I'd like to see them. Okay, thank you all for coming, and have a good Yom Kippur, and Sukkot.
Let me add one thing.